This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc., and we thank him for joining us, as he does every Wednesday at this hour. Michael, we're in the midst, Mardi Gras 2025. We're about halfway through, actually, right now. So far, so good.
So far, so good. Yeah, we are deep in it. And a day like today, I mean, this is Mardi Gras perfect. I've been talking to some friends who are going to be riding, and everybody is just so excited. I mean, this is a uniquely New Orleans type of feeling, that beautiful, crisp kind of spring day, parades coming at night. There's just like an energy, electricity in the air, and it's very special. But you know also that we are deep in it. You're either in the box or out of the box. Either way, you're in it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And it looks like the weather forecast is improving for the back half of this Mardi Gras day. They looked like they were predicting some rain, maybe some on Monday too. That may be dissipating. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that that continues to be the case.
Yeah, no, it should be gorgeous tonight, you know, gorgeous tomorrow night, and we should have a good tote ride this weekend. So it's nice, and you know, it coming on the heels of the Super Bowl, which to me kind of already felt like Mardi Gras between the energy and even the, you know, the parade itself. It feels like we're keeping the party going, and yeah, so far so great. Except for one small incident involving a float and an exit ramp. But, you know, it's kind of shocking that it doesn't happen more often.
No, it really is. You know, one of the things that I miss being sheriff is that I was a motorcycle guy. I rode as a kid, always had a motorcycle. So I would ride with the motorcycle division every year during Mardi Gras. And I got to tell you, that's the one thing I miss more than anything else is the experience of riding a Harley and working with the guys. I really do miss that.
So were you one of those guys that would like roll up like with your flashers on and like block the intersection so the parade could go past? And
I did it all. Got up early in the morning and got to bed late at night, depending on what other obligations that I had. But I did not like to compromise any minutes that I had on a Harley.
you were right. Actually, you know, we helped the 8th District get some of these new Harleys for safety for the Super Bowl and Mardi Gras. They're kind of these their Harleys are 1200s. But they're smaller. They're kind of like the Enduros, like the BMW. So they're super maneuverable, a lot smaller than the big, beautiful hogs. And they let me sit on one. I still got an endorsement on my license, but ever since I had kids, the wife doesn't let me ride anymore. She says I've got to stay upright.
Yeah, I suffer from that same affliction, Michael. It's horrible.
Yeah,
I have a little bitty Vespa type Honda 110 that I actually I was zipping around on it yesterday afternoon. It was too pretty not to be.
Are you sure? Are you sure it's not a John Deere? But you know, either way, that's fine. No,
exactly. It's pitiful. It's pitiful.
You know, we evolve. We have the memories, but you go.
No, I was just going to say, I had a guy zip by on a Triumph, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I said, please don't laugh at me.
I had a, when I was, you know, when I was younger, I had a 1972 Honda CB350 gold. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it didn't go fast, but God, it was hip. It was great, and I enjoyed it until I laid it down on the tram tracks one day during the rain, and then thought, okay, maybe that's a sign that, you know, I need either training wheels or four wheels.
Still have scars on the legs from laying down the bike many, many times. Michael, what's going on with this? Let's pivot real quick. No River Parish Park, the Department of Interior, they've turned their back on us. What's up with that?
No, this is great news. So we've been involved in a protracted fight across the country, but with a focus on the river region. It's been happening kind of behind the scenes, where, and this is just what's been going on, there have been some national philanthropies like Rockefeller, like Bloomberg, like Soros, that have been running essentially these anti-industry campaigns. And they've been doing it not because specifically they have environmental concerns that they want to clean up, but they're just taking a throw out the baby with the bathwater approach where they want to shut down all industry, and which of course is incredibly arrogant and or naive, but they got a lot of money. And the way that they've been doing this typically is by feeding funds into local groups, which then use it for political harassment campaigns or lawsuits to try to slow down and kill deals. And they've had some success with that, most notably with a grain elevator that was supposed to go in one of the poorest parts of the state that they were able to effectively shut down so that people don't have any opportunities there. Well, what they decided then to do was to take it up a notch in terms of the subterfuge. And within the Biden administration, they basically convinced the National Park Service to consider making 11 miles in the river region on the river into a national, not a national park, but a national heritage site, one level below. And what that would have done, if they would have been successful, it would have seemed great. Who's against parks? But they effectively would have taken 11 miles of the best suited land for good industry and good jobs out of commission essentially forever, because it would be impossible to get a permit to build a plant and a heritage site. And we were trying to figure out how to stop it. And frankly, it basically took a change of administration and it instantly went away.
So projects like the LNG could have been, you know, that was one of the largest projects in the history of the state of Louisiana, would non-existent if this would have happened, right? In the future.
Well, you know, the LNG. Yeah, in the future. I mean, so, you know, it could be steel facilities. It could be grain elevators. We have a facility that's going in St. John that's going to be the world's largest facility that's going to be producing carbon negative natural gas. So we're not talking about, you know, facilities that are going to be bad for the environment, but that would have been a no-go. They basically would have been shutting, it would be people in, I mean, I know this sounds tin hatty, but sometimes, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. It would have been folks in New York, D.C., and California ensuring that people in Louisiana were unable to work and that Louisiana was unable to make products that were essential for the economy and defense of the country. And it's just a very self-cannibalizing way to go about things. We're not talking about, you know, having smart environmental restrictions. Everybody wants that. Everybody wants clean water. Everybody wants clean soil. This is about making industry wholesale impossible. And, you know, I don't have to explain to you or I think anybody listening why that is a terrible idea for Louisiana and a terrible idea for the country. But they had tons of money, and folks like George Soros, who are very old and very rich, and at that point, very arrogant, will stop at basically nothing to show that they have their way. And so it really took a change of administration to stop this nonsense. And now we can go forward with smart growth.
Is most of this motivated by the Greens, the climate folks?
Well, yes and no. There are two, you know, just like everything these days, there are degrees. There are a lot of folks who are environmentalists and want to have a clean, again, you know, a clean environment for our kids and for the future on both sides of the aisle, including people who agree that anthropogenic climate change is a real thing and we need to try to do something about it. But then there are people at the extreme who simply want to shut down industry, either because they actually want to go back to the Stone Ages or because they naively don't understand that all that plastic in their Tesla has to be produced somewhere along with the electricity that powers it. So, you know, I guess you could call it the far left, but I think it's more just a radical fringe that is against molecules, is against industry, is against anything that, you know, is more industrial than, you know, unicorn gas. And so and it got a lot of momentum over the past few years because the people funding it, again, tend to have billions at their disposal.
Well, it's interesting, though, because these are some of the most valuable assets in the country because these are the major economic corridors, right, among our waterways. I mean, when you think about what we're able to do here and the whole our whole existence is because of that land on that body of water.
Well, let me be very specific about one project just to show you the absurdity of this. If we have 3 minutes to talk about it. So this was a grain elevator that was going to go in Wallace on the west bank of St. John. Wallace is an area that's so impoverished that there's not even a full-size Family Dollar. Okay, we're talking about a very impoverished population for generations. The grain elevator would have been state-of-the-art, would have been storing soy and corn. Now, to your point about the nation, 90% of the nation's grain comes out through the Mississippi River. Right, for either domestic use or export. So if we're unable to store grain, to store food on the river, then what are we able to do on the river? But the Rockefeller Foundation got behind shutting this down. And I remember having a discussion with a woman with the foundation, and she was sitting in D.C., and she was lecturing me on environmental justice and on the history of race and class. And I'm listening to her, and I'm thinking, does she know that she works for a foundation that got its money from John D. Rockefeller? He founded Exxon. He was literally the original robber baron. Like, he was the archetype for Scrooge McDuck. And she's sitting in D.C. lecturing me on environmental and racial justice. And I'm thinking, when you don't allow people to have access to these jobs that would pay $75,000 a year plus benefits, you are condemning them to work in the sparse retail or in hospitality. And by the way, the hospitality that's in the river region is working on plantations. And somehow this irony or this point just escaped her because at that point she was the teacher and I was the student. So this whole thing kind of got to absurd lengths and, you know, the pendulum just needs to come back. Again, we're for smart growth. We're for protecting the environment. But we're also for creating those jobs that allow people to have middle-class stability, allow them to pay the note on their home, allow them to send their kids to college. In fact, one of the reasons why health outcomes in the river region are better than other parts of Louisiana is because people tend to make more money from the industrial jobs and therefore have better education and better health care. So we just need, I mean, the best thing that we see coming out of D.C. these days, I think, is the discussion around common sense. And this is just kind of a common sense thing at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they suggest that we're going to survive, you know. So the House narrowly passes the big, beautiful bill, as Donald Trump put it last night. there are significant cuts that are proposed, many of which are going to have an adverse impact on us here in Louisiana. And the only way that we can overcome that is going to be through economic growth, right? I mean, it's a fairly simple equation, right? I mean, I don't know. It's not that complex.
It's really straightforward. The ultimate, I was just talking with Dan Doctoroff, who was the architect of the comeback of New York City after 9/11. He's kind of a mentor of mine. And he says that the ultimate measure of the health of a community is the population. That's how you really keep score. And the fact is that people move to follow economic opportunity. So if you don't have economic opportunity, you don't have population stability and growth, and a place collapses. And so then you have to start thinking, maybe is it actually the intention of some of these policies to collapse the economies and the communities of these places that don't hew exactly to their cultural dictate? I don't know. I don't tend to believe in conspiracies because I believe in incompetence more than I believe in intention. But certainly by omission, if not commission, I'll give you another example. I'm sorry, you got me on a rant here, but I'm sitting in the Metairie Post Office parking lot, so I got time. I was talking to a woman who said that she was going to shut down, she was going to shut down a facility that we have in Ascension Parish, or in St. James. It was going to create 1,200 jobs at an average salary of $93,000 each, plus benefits. So, game changers for over 1,000 people. And there was their intention to shut this down because it was going to be making plastics, and plastics are bad, right? Because, again, all of the interior of the Tesla is made from angel skin or something. And so I said to her, and she was very direct. So to her credit, she said, we're going to shut down that plant. And I said, okay, I get that, but do you have a plan to replace those 1,200 jobs that you are going to kill that would have created middle-class mobility and opportunity? And without hesitating, she said, no, we don't have a plan for that. And that's when I said, okay, game on. Because this is now, you're invading our country, our state, and you're trying to harm us. And we know from the history of doing this, even as a nation, that you can never beat people on their home turf because we have everything to fight for. And you're doing this for ideological or abstract reasons. And they've not shut down the plant. But it just shows you what we're up against. It is, it ultimately is arrogance trending into cruelty, I think, which is based on cultural tribalism.
Yeah, I love when you flip the conversation on her and say, let's assume for a moment that you are 100% successful in your endeavor. We no longer manufacture plastics. How do we live? If it was like Doge asking, what did you do for the last 5 days? Why don't we just have them list how many plastic items they have in their life that they come in contact with in the last 5 days? And let's see how expensive that list may be.
All of these things are about balance. There's a fascinating article I'll send you in the Times about Denmark. And it's saying, why is Denmark the only country that's been able to maintain a very generous social welfare policy, whereas all these other places like Sweden and Germany are having very serious problems? Sweden has the highest rate of gun violence in all of Europe right now. And what it says is, you might not know this, but it's very, very difficult to immigrate into Denmark. They've actually got very, very strict immigration laws. And what it basically is saying is that you have to strike a balance. If you want to have nice things, you have to have reasonable policies, because when you go too far, and he's saying in the case of immigration, having open borders, then you basically fray social trust and you can't actually have the social contract that creates a successful welfare state. And that applies everywhere. And it's the same thing, that if you want to actually have a society that is just and that is environmentally reasonable, then you have to have, in Germany, because they shut down nuclear power, they were burning almost as much carbon per capita as China recently, because they had to go back to coal. And so anyway, I mean, you know, I'm preaching to the choir right now, but it just says in all these things that when ideology overcomes common sense, you create an internal logic, either because it gives you, you know, social capital or because you just stop listening, and it ultimately leads to bad outcomes. So we're just trying to swing the pendulum back a little bit, I think.
Absolutely, no doubt. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of G&O Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Welcome back, folks. Michael, I just wanted to talk real quick about Pan American Life Insurance Group. They've donated $1 million to support the new Xavier Ochsner College of Medicine, which that seems to be on a track that's really healthy thus far.
Yeah, so two things here. One, a big shout out and credit to Pan American Life Insurance Group, one of the great longstanding companies here in the region, headquartered in New Orleans, operating all over the hemisphere, one of the real pillars of our economy. And the fact that they're going to be supporting the Xavier Ochsner College of Medicine demonstrates the importance of having these corporate headquarters, because they not only create jobs, they help support great causes like developing only the 5th African-American school of medicine in the country, which Xavier is doing with Ochsner. And that's going to be so important, because Xavier produces more black doctors than any college of any size in the country.
and they go and get their degree outside of New Orleans, outside of Louisiana far too often. So this is going to help keep that talent, which is so needed here in the state, and it's going to produce more great African-American doctors for the entire country.
Absolutely. We have a special guest, Michael.
Yeah, well, this is a guy who we're just playing Renegade by Jay-Z and Eminem to enter him. He is a renegade. That's the name of his company. And what Wesley Palmisano is trying to do, and I'll let him tell you in his own words, I think is totally revolutionize the construction industry, which is one of the only industries that has actually become less productive over the past two decades. I think it's his goal to show it can be done better through vertical integration and create better products, innovative products at lower cost. And his new move to his new facility over on LNA, over in Metairie, in Jefferson, rather, is part of that move, his new campus. So here's Wesley Palmisano to tell you all about the future.
I've known Wes for a number of years, and I'm really excited about having you on the show, Wes, this morning, and want to just say congratulations to the growth of your company. You know, what's interesting, Wes, is that you've been one of the few that has pulled off name changes fairly well for your company over this short period of time. Is this your second or third name?
Yeah, it's certainly been an interesting part of the journey, and thank you for having me. We have changed names and actually merged some brands together is the honest story behind the scenes that, you know, we started out with a family name construction company, Palmisano, and realized pretty quickly that we were innovative and challenging the status quo in the industry, and it didn't feel quite right for our brand and who we were as an organization to be, like everyone else, named after the last name of the founder. And so we decided to make a shift. And at that time, we were operating actually as multiple brands for a period of time in somewhat of a house of brands approach. And then ultimately in 2024, consolidated, which is part of the story of the move to the new headquarters that I know we're going to talk about today and get into. And part of that story was this idea of one team, one mission, and integrating everyone underneath the Renegade brand that actually has been with us since 2018 and was a big part of our organization and our growth strategy over the last 5 years or so. And the conversation with the team evolved into, let's just combine everyone underneath one umbrella rather than operating as three separate organizations.
So tell us about this new campus, 14 acres, 150,000 square feet of built space, and a 30,000 square foot office building in Metairie now in Jefferson Parish. It was just recently announced, and congratulations for that as well.
Yeah, thank you. The move into our new headquarters really was born out of the next phase of our business plan. So we were 10 years in business. We were founded here locally in 2013. We're a startup story, and we spent 10 years really solidifying our ability to execute work and to be a player in the local industry. And that first 10 years, we incubated and grew multiple different lines of business. And then in 2023, had a record year and certainly an amazing success story. And our team has been remarkable and resilient, their ability to continue to execute through all the different challenges that have been thrown our way over the course of that first 10 years. And then at our 10-year anniversary, record year, and we were listed on the ENR 400 was certainly a proud moment for the team of being one of the leaders in not only the local market, but the nation in the construction services arena. And that caused us to pause and put together a new strategic plan. So 2024, we viewed as an organization, a transitional year where we spent our first 10 solidifying our presence as a business. 2024 was dialing into where we're headed and then rolling out a new plan, which is our next 10 years of 25 to 35. And that transitional year, I mentioned briefly a minute ago, decided to consolidate underneath the Renegade brand. We also decided that we could accelerate the pace of our transition if we were to co-locate on one campus. So that was really the driver of why we pursued what we did. We had an amazing office on Chapultepec in New Orleans, and certainly for us, you know, I'm born and raised here and consider myself a New Orleanian regardless of parish lines. And so we looked for somewhere where we could actually bring together the future vision for the business in one place. And it, and honestly, it's hard to come by within the greater New Orleans area, a 14-acre site that you can do what we ultimately did here. And so it was a unique opportunity in the LeBar Business Park to move our team to a little bit more of an industrial environment rather than being downtown, which the reason we came to the industrial environment is that we believe the future of the industry and our ability to challenge the status quo and revolutionize how we build things, which is our core purpose, is tied directly to what we're able to incubate in this facility. So we're leaning heavily into prefabrication. We also have a big training center component here. And, you know, those pieces and elements are tied back to that core purpose. And when we say we're going to revolutionize how we build, it's not, you know, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is the construction project. But, you know, we really mean by that is not only the project, but the people in the business and how are we accelerating the pace of their growth as leaders, the broader community, and, you know, through our foundation, the charitable work that we do in the community. And so we look at the word build very broadly in influencing outcomes in a variety of different ways and not necessarily just the physical construction project.
You know, it's interesting, for a couple of decades now, it's really been more about decentralization as opposed to centralization, right? And it's, so what kind of, what piqued your curiosity about going down this path? I mean, you were somewhat decentralized before, and just, you know, going hardcore into centralization of this one compound.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. And, you know, I think maybe that's part of our core ethos of being renegades and challenging the status quo, that our industry for a period of time now has gone down this road of more trade partners, more subcontracting, you know, being highly specialized in one specific area of business. But if you look back in history, there were times certainly where the idea of being what we classify internally as being a true builder and being able to bring a different value to the equation through vertical integration and unlock key pieces of value by doing that and eliminating some inefficiencies maybe that aren't inherent in the typical process today is one of the things that, even though it's not necessarily a new or novel idea, we feel like is a little bit of being renegades and challenging the status quo of the way that things have been done in recent history. And so we certainly have leaned heavily into that. And this consolidation and this one team, one mission is one of the key themes in our business right now, you know, and was tied to rebrand as well as campus relocation, that, you know, we're all pushing the same direction and working together to move the needle on how projects get delivered for the construction industry.
You were able to pull this off in a relatively short period of time. So I got to imagine there were folks helping you, like parish government and others. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, the collaboration that we experienced with all different levels of government, you know, we worked with the LED, with GNO Inc. and Michael's organization. We worked with JEDCO, since we are located in Jefferson Parish, and then, of course, Jefferson Parish as well. And the level of cooperation and collaboration that we received from every aspect of the process was amazing. And we tried to pull off something here just triggered by the fact that we wanted to make this transition for the business in 2024. So when we decided to do this, we actually didn't close on the property until March of 24, and then started design and conversations about what we wanted to do at that point, but really didn't get started on the work until the summer. And so in an expedited schedule, and the construction work was actually done in about 5 months, which was a
wow,
extremely fast pace for the size and quality of the facility that we delivered. It was remarkable what our team was able to pull off. But of course, that wasn't without a lot of help and collaboration from the public officials and the economic development organizations that helped us facilitate everything that we made happen, including things, you know, even down to the level of being able to expedite permitting and push permits through and, you know, break the project into parts and pieces from a design perspective so we could accelerate the pace of certain items while we were still designing and working on others. And we deployed our prefabrication capacity on this project. So that was a big part of the strategy as well. A lot of the elements of this project were being built in the shop environment while we were working on other elements. And, you know, key prefabricated elements were structure, skin, and then the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems. And so we were able to bring together a prefabricated kit of parts here that accelerated the pace of the schedule and took what would ordinarily be at least a 12-month project, given the size and magnitude of what we did here, in 5 months.
If you would, you know, prefabrication has been around for, it's been thought about for a long time. I don't know that it's really been vertically integrated in a bunch of different companies successfully. In some areas of the country, it has happened. I'm not so certain it's happened here. Is there like a generally accepted difference in cost structure? I've been told that the delta can be well into the double digits of having prefab structures built as opposed to on-site construction.
Yeah, we believe there are tremendous benefits in doing it, and you're completely right that it has not been done at scale in many instances, certainly in our region, but, you know, more nationally. The best examples of prefabrication done at scale actually are in Europe. And that's something that we've studied a lot for a variety of different reasons. There are actually some major failures that have taken place in the U.S. over the last 5 or 10 years where people have attempted to do it and it didn't necessarily pan out the way they had hoped. And so it's definitely a high-risk venture and something that we have studied and continue to study and try to learn from the past and some of the other organizations that have attempted it. And the vertical integration that you've mentioned is certainly one of the things that we've identified as a key, because without vertical integration, you're left beholden to other stakeholders and other people who may not necessarily be focused on the efficiency that's required to fabricate a component part at scale. And so the efficiency is then tied directly to your ability to not customize too much, you know, limit the level of customization, and then to have repeatable parts that can be applied to a variety of different projects. And so, you know, I guess I'm going to get a little bit technical here, but you have what's called volumetric modular versus non-volumetric. And volumetric means the boxes, you know, so a lot of times you'll see structures built where people are stacking boxes up to build a larger building. And I think that's what most people think of when you think of prefabrication is the box methodology. That one is one that we don't really prescribe to. We'd rather non-volumetric means component kit of parts, and you're assembling those parts. You're able to flat pack and ship them, and shipping is significantly more efficient. And then you're able to take those repeatable parts and assemble them in different configurations that do give you some level of customization that's not available to you when you're trying to do it with boxes.
It's just finding that optimum dimension of that can be reused over and over and over again. When you're talking about cubic volume, you know that you're going to have that repetitive nature exist, right?
Right. Yeah. And so ours is I mentioned some of the key components, but
Wes,
yeah,
let me interrupt you. I'm sorry. Let's get to a break because I want to talk about the Renegade Academy, because I think this is groundbreaking as well. When you think about this culture and this mindset and this ideology that you're actually developing inside of your company. We'll be right back with Wes Palmisano, the founder and CEO of Renegade, a local construction and design leader. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., as well as Wes Palmisano, founder and CEO of Renegade, a local construction company and design leader, just moved their corporate headquarters to LeBar Business Park in Jefferson Parish. Wes, one of the things that you have done is you've set up the Renegade Academy, and in order to develop kind of a pipeline for your company in creating skilled workers, not only for your company, but for the community at large. Tell us about that.
Renegade Academy has been a core part of our continued growth, and we wanted to reinvest in that given the future trajectory of where we're headed over the next 10 years. And you know, with our mission to build better leaders in the industry, we recognized back in 2018 when we started on this journey is that the typical supervisor in the construction industry doesn't receive a ton of leadership training. It tends to be on the job, as was typical in the construction industry, and they don't receive formal leadership training, but at the same time, they're expected to manage over the course of their career hundreds of millions of dollars of work, you know, especially at the scale that we operate. And so you have people that are not getting formal leadership skills training. So our mission with Renegade Academy is not necessarily focused on, and we do some skills-based training, but it's not usually and primarily focused on just the technical skills. It actually focuses a little bit more on soft skills and leadership abilities. And so as part of our corporate headquarters, we decided to build a 25,000 square foot training center that offers a variety of different training for all different types of roles and positions, with the goal that everyone is growing in their ability to be a leader. And that's something that initially we're incubating and focusing on our organization. But over time, we actually expect that to open up to other organizations and to have that program play a role in moving the industry forward. You know, if we can be part of a movement that helps advance the broader industry, that also aligns with our mission. And so that academy and the commitment that we made by investing in this training center is part of our strategic plan for the next 10 years.
Absolutely. I love that. That really exciting, and best of luck to you. Congratulations to you and all the members of your company that I know are working hard each and every day. And we appreciate you coming on with us today as well. Michael, final thoughts?
No, great job, Wes. And look, I actually applied to the Renegade Academy and was rejected, which I think speaks to the quality standards that Wes is inculcating in his company. And so I applaud him for that.
He is very insightful, for sure. No doubt about it.
I'm going to have to look into that application, Michael, see if we can pull some strings and get you in.
Hey,
yeah, if you know
good
somebody,
luck.
No, look, Wes is, you know, we talked about Pan American Life. Wes is building one of the next great regional companies, and it's going to impact lives, not just in his company in the industry, but throughout the region and state. So I congratulate Wes and his entire team.
And Wes, good luck managing the relationship with Michael Heck. We wish you the best on that front as well.
All right.
Thank you both very much. Have a great Mardi Gras season as well. Wes Palmisano, founder and CEO of Renegade, a local construction design leader. And Michael, as always, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Have a great Mardi Gras.
Thanks, Noel. Have a great ride. Take
care. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.